On her spin, Taylor Swift, Bruce Springsteen, Beyonce, and Oprah are among the entertainers in Donald Trump's all caps sights for, it would seem, endorsing Kamala Harris in the election, and or maybe saying something unflattering about him or his actions, which in his brain and that of the minions who've chosen to share that brain constitutes an illegal political contribution to his opponents, wherever they may lurk. At a moment when politicians who swore actual oaths are throwing over even the pretense of democracy or public service or basic human decency, many of us are looking to artists to be truth tellers and spirit lifters, to convey maybe not so much information as energy, the fearless, collective, forward-looking joy that can sustain a beleaguered people in a threatening time. There is a deep history of protest music and music as protest, and our guest is very intentionally a part of that. Tom Morello is a guitarist, part of Rage Against the Machine, Audioslave, Prophets of Rage, and the Night Watchmen, among many other projects. His music has always been intertwined with his activism and advocacy for social, racial, and economic justice.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We didn't need the National Guard. Why on earth? What are they going to do? Do you know what the National Guard is doing now? They are guarding two buildings. They're guarding the federal building here in downtown, and they're guarding the federal building in Westwood. That's what they're doing. So they need Marines on top of it? I don't understand that. That's why I feel like we are part of an experiment we did not ask to be a part of.
The Pentagon's deploying 700 Marines to Los Angeles, and President Trump deployed an additional 2,000 members of the National Guard, bringing the total to 4,000 as part of an unprecedented military response to community protests in L.A. against immigration raids. We'll speak to California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
In partnership with Governor Gavin Newsom, are suing President Trump and asking the court to set aside the president's unlawful action federalizing the California National Guard.
We'll also speak with reporter Gene Guerrero in L.A., author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. And we'll get an update on Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father, who was wrongfully sent to a maximum security mega prison in El Salvador. He's now back in the U.S. in a Tennessee prison, facing federal charges. And we'll talk to a U.S. diplomat who resigned over Gaza and is now joining the global march to Gaza to break the Israeli siege. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Protests continued in Los Angeles Monday as the Trump administration announced it's sending 700 Marines to the city. They're expected to arrive in L.A. by this evening, deployed from nearby Camp Pendleton, in addition to another 2,000 National Guard who were sent to crack down on protests that erupted over a wave of ICE raids across L.A., bringing the total National Guard presence in L.A. to 4,000. California's filed a lawsuit in response to Trump's deployment of National Guard and Marine forces, which Governor Gavin Newsom called a, quote, blatant abuse of power. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass accused the Trump administration of fomenting chaos and making L.A. a test case for imposing authoritarian rule against more U.S. cities.
We need to stop the raids. This should not be happening in our city. It is not warranted, and the only thing it does is contribute to chaos. This was chaos that was started at Washington, D.C. On Thursday, the city was peaceful. On Friday, it was not, because of the intervention of the federal government And it's, again, I don't think our city should be a test case, a laboratory.
We will speak with California's Attorney General Rob Bonta, who brought lawsuits against Trump, later in the broadcast. David Huerta, head of the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union in California, was released on bond Monday following his arrest by ICE Friday, which provoked widespread outrage. Huerta was charged with conspiring to impede an officer, which could result in a six-year federal prison sentence if convicted. Huerta called for a justice for all detained immigrants following his release.
So I just want to say that when we're here, there's protests outside. That means in there, they're in lockdown right now. They're in lockdown. They cannot come out of their cells. Not even to eat. They cannot come out.
Earlier Monday, loved ones of detained warehouse workers rallied outside a clothing manufacturing plant that was raided by ICE Friday.
This state loves to boast about it being the best. This whole country boasts about being the best. But how can we claim that if we can't uphold basic human rights and due process? I also want to ask, where's the sanctuary California promised us when our police departments choose to defend ICE officials instead of its own people?
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's contacted the U.S. government over what he called the horrific shooting by L.A. police of Australian reporter Lauren Thomasy. She was hit by a rubber bullet while she covered the protests. The group Reporters Without Borders condemned attacks on journalists covering the demonstrations in L.A., which have impacted at least 27 media workers between Friday and Sunday. Meanwhile, the city of Glendale in Los Angeles County announced Sunday night it's ending its agreement with Homeland Security to detain immigrants arrested by ICE amidst the popular revolt. Several Democratic Congress members from California and New York say they were blocked from entering Immigration and Customs Enforcement jails for safety inspections over the weekend to check on people arrested during recent mass raids. Among the group is California Congress member Maxine Waters, who Sunday attempted to inspect conditions at the Metropolitan Federal Detention Center, where David Huerta, president of the California branch of SEIU, was jailed. Here in New York, Congress members Nydia Velazquez and Adriano Espaillat said they were blocked from inspecting an ICE jail in Manhattan, 26 Federal Plaza, where advocates say over 100 immigrants recently arrested at federal court hearings are now being detained in overcrowded cells. The detainees have also been reportedly forced to sleep on bathroom floors. In Gaza, at least 60 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks since Monday. In southern Gaza, Israeli forces opened fire on a group of families walking to an aid site, killing at least 20 Palestinians, injuring over 100 others. At Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, health workers say they've been overwhelmed with cases of people attacked while seeking aid. This is Dr. Mohammed Sakhar.
Daily, we receive many martyrs and wounded people from the U.S. food distribution centers located in Rafah. Most of the martyrs and the wounded who arrive at Nasser Medical Complex, their injuries are in the upper part of their body, especially the chest and head area. Unfortunately, the situation is tragic. Daily, we receive dozens of martyrs and wounded.
At least three Palestinian paramedics were also killed in Israeli strikes while attempting to rescue wounded families from an Israeli airstrike on a home in Gaza City. Their names are Hussein Abu Faisal, Wael al-Attar, and Bara Fana. The journalist Momen Abu al-Awf was also killed in that attack, the 227th media worker killed in Gaza over the last 20 months. This all comes as a UN commission says Israeli attacks on Gaza's schools, religious and cultural sites amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. In more news from the region, Israel launched overnight strikes on Yemen's port city of Hodeidah, a key port for the entry of humanitarian aid. Israeli officials have also threatened to impose an aerial and naval blockade in response to ongoing Houthi attacks on Israeli and Israel-linked vessels, which the group launched in response to Israel's war on Gaza. Israel's formally placed under arrest 8 of the 12 international activists from the Gaza Freedom Flotilla after they refused to sign a voluntary deportation order. One of those arrested is Reema Hassan, French-Palestinian member of the European Parliament. Earlier today, Israel deported other Freedom Flotilla passengers, including the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. Massive protests erupted in France Monday in response to Israel's raid of the Madeleine in international waters as the ship attempted to deliver food and medicine to besieged Palestinians in Gaza. 5 of the Madeleine passengers were French. Greta Thunberg is also being deported to Paris. More international activists are making their way towards Gaza, this time by land, in an effort to break the Israeli siege. On Sunday, a Tunisian-led road convoy of activists, lawyers, and medical professionals started the journey from Tunis towards the Rafah crossing in Egypt. This is organizer Wael Nawar.
This march is not a train or a plane. It is a protest or an independent, mobile, Maharajan popular gathering, which will stop in many countries and at many stations in Libya, Tunisia, and Egypt. It will speak to people, speak about the Palestinian right, mobilize people, and more than that, will remind everyone that Palestine is not just on social media or in another planet, but it is at days walking distance. So the Arab people should remember that we are one land, one people.
Hundreds of activists from around the world are expected to converge in Cairo this week before making the journey by foot to Rafah as part of the Global March to Gaza. One of the high-profile participants will be Zwelivilele Mandla Mandela, South African Member of Parliament, grandson of Nelson Mandela. We'll speak to another participant, former Biden administration official, Hala Rarit, who resigned over Gaza from the State Department. We'll speak with her later in the broadcast. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. fired all 17 members of the Centers for Disease Control's Vaccine Advisory Panel, accusing the panel of conflicts of interest. The move was roundly condemned by medical associations and public health experts. Dr. Richard Besser, former acting director of the Centers for Disease Control, said, quote, "Nobody has done more than Secretary Kennedy to sow unwarranted doubt about the safety and effectiveness of vaccines. This decision demonstrates a complete lack of caring about the health and safety of every American," he said. The committee's recommendations are considered binding and affect which vaccinations must be covered by insurance. Kennedy had vowed to keep the committee in place during his confirmation hearings. Meanwhile, some 340 employees at the National Institutes of Health penned a scathing letter to agency director Jay Bhattacharya, objecting to the termination of over 2,000 research grants and the cancellation of over $12 million in grants and contracts. The letter, entitled the Bethesda Declaration, reads, quote, "We dissent to administration policies that undermine the NIH mission, waste public resources, and harm the health of Americans and people across the globe," unquote. Some 5,000 NIH workers have been fired by the Trump administration. Separately, Public Citizen Monday published an open letter signed by 6,000 medical professionals admonishing the Trump administration's cuts to health agencies and the Republican plan to slash Medicaid in the current spending proposal. The health workers wrote, quote, "We are certain this will cost lives," unquote. In Austria, at least 9 people have been killed in a mass shooting at a high school in the city of Graz. Several students are among the victims. The suspect has also been reported dead. And Brazil's former president Jair Bolsonaro is expected to take the stand this week as a Brasilia court considers attempted coup charges against the disgraced leader, who's accused of masterminding a far-right conspiracy plot to cling to power after his 2022 re-election loss to President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The coup plot allegedly included a plan to assassinate Lula and a Supreme Court justice. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Los Angeles as the Trump administration sends more troops into the city following 4 days of protests against military-style immigration raids. The Pentagon's deployed 700 Marines to Los Angeles, and President Trump's deployed an additional 2,000 members in the National Guard, bringing the total National Guard's members to 4,000. On Monday, the state of California sued to block the use of National Guard troops. We'll speak to California's Attorney General Rob Bonta later in the broadcast. On Monday, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass decried the militarized response.
We didn't need the National Guard. Why on earth? What are they going to do? Do you know what the National Guard is doing now? They are guarding two buildings. They're guarding the federal building here in downtown, and they're guarding the federal building in Westwood. That's what they're doing. So they need Marines on top of it? I don't understand that. That's why I feel like we are part of an experiment we did not ask to be a part of.
Despite the Trump administration's militarized response, community protests against ICE raids are continuing in Los Angeles and other cities. In fact, on Saturday, the day that President Trump will be celebrating his 79th birthday, and there will be Abrams tanks in a birthday parade in Washington, D.C., rolling through the streets of the Capitol. We go now to Los Angeles, where we're joined by Jean Guerrero. She's contributing opinion writer at The New York Times and author of the book Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. Jean, why don't we start off by you describing the protests on the streets. Have you been to them? And talk about this unprecedented use of military power. And the Republican Party, the party that champions states' rights, President Trump going against the states' rights to bring in the U.S. military against the wishes of the local mayor, Karen Bass, and the governor of California, Governor Newsom.
Absolutely, Amy. It's great to be here. I want to be clear about what is happening here. The federal government is going into the diverse communities of Los Angeles to terrorize them. They are ICE is showing up outside of schools, outside of Home Depots, outside of other workplaces. They're snatching people off of the streets, outside of their homes, in front of their children, often without warrants. But what's happening in these protests is that people of all races and backgrounds are putting their bodies on the line to protect their friends, their neighbors, their family members from these arrests. And it is a beautiful thing to see. I was just at one of the protests yesterday where I spoke to grandmothers, you know, white grandmothers who are going out to protect people that they love and who they're afraid could be picked up by ICE. I spoke to Latinas who are, you know, afraid of being racially profiled and arrested because of the indiscriminate nature of these arrests, but they are nevertheless putting their bodies on the line because they're citizens and they believe in using their privilege to defend the people that they care about. And these protests have been largely peaceful. These are people who want to tell ICE that they are not welcome in their communities. And what we're seeing is a provocation. You know, the deployment of the National Guard and the Marines against the wishes of California's leaders, it is an attack on the sovereignty of the state of California, and it is an effort to provoke Angelenos into a violent confrontation. They want protesters to react violently, to distract from what is really happening, which is that, you know, families are being separated, our communities are being devastated, and the people of Los Angeles are standing up to say, we will not stand for this. But the administration is trying to bait them into violence, to brand them as rebels and justify sweeping federal crackdowns and to create the viral images that will distract Americans from the appalling reality that ICE is kidnapping valued community members and destroying families here in Los Angeles.
And Gene, you've posted on social media, quote, Trump's immigration agenda is not about law and order. It's about reengineering the racial demographics of this country. Could you elaborate, especially in terms of the fact that Stephen Miller, Trump's key advisor, has called this a fight for civilization?
Yeah, you know, this crackdown is personal for Stephen Miller. As I report in my book, Hate Monger, when he was a high school student in Los Angeles, he frequently antagonized his Latino and immigrant classmates, telling them to, quote, speak English and to go back to their home countries. Back then, he was criticized for his views, and he has spent his career trying to punish the communities that rejected him. These mass deportations are not about border security. They're not about crime. They're about erasing the multicultural fabric of places like Los Angeles. And, you know, I want to repeat that this is not about cracking down on crime. Let's remember that on his first day in office, President Trump pardoned the people who violently assaulted law enforcement during the storming of the Capitol on January 6th. So Trump and Miller are not against crime. They're not against gang members. In fact, in my book, I extensively document Miller's early dreams of being a gangster. What they're doing is they're running a mafia state that scapegoats immigrants as a pretext for the subjugation of us all. So again, they do not care about law and order. Miller's central obsession was never illegal immigration. It was always legal immigration. This is why from day one you saw the strangling of refugees, access to refugees, a suffocation of the asylum system, strangling of green card access, the attack on birthright citizenship, trying to now invoke the Insurrection Act to deport people indiscriminately simply based on the color of their skin. So again, this is not about national security. It is an ideological project of demographic engineering cloaked in the language of law enforcement, and LA is resisting.
And could you talk about the number of journalists who have also been injured by law enforcement these past few days in Los Angeles?
Yes, several journalists, including colleagues of mine, have been hit with non-lethal rounds. Some have been hospitalized. I believe PEN America has recorded at least 27 attacks on LA journalists since June 6th. Reporters are being shot with rubber bullets and chemical munitions. And this is very concerning because these so-called non-lethal rounds can, in fact, be fatal. The respected Chicano journalist Ruben Salazar was killed with a tear gas canister in 1970 while covering protests here in LA. And that memory lingers for journalists here in the city, especially for Latino journalists who are trying to expose the injustices that are happening in their communities.
Gene Guerrero, if you can talk about what is happening in Los Angeles right now, is where all of the attention is because of this unprecedented calling out by Trump and Hegseth, the defense secretary, of the Marines and thousands of National Guard, federalizing them. But in fact, this is happening all over the country. If you can talk more about the two men you wrote a book about, your book, Hate Mongers, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. You have Stephen Miller saying that the ICE agents have to go to 7-Elevens, have to go to Home Depots. This is very different than Trump talking about getting the murderers and rapists, and bringing up the number to 3,000 arrests a day. So you see mass arrests taking place in Texas. You see them in Arizona. We're not even at this point paying attention because of the militarization of Los Angeles.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing is sort of exponentially what we saw during the first administration, which is resources are being diverted from serious homeland security investigations, from serious drug trafficking and human trafficking investigations to try to meet these quotas of human beings rounded up to satisfy Miller's appetite for cracking down on immigrants, whether they're legal or whether they're here illegally. And one thing that has not gotten enough attention and which I want to underscore is that what's happening in LA is people are risking their safety not only to resist what is happening, not only to resist these kidnappings of their valued community members, but to document and to expose and to bear witness to what is happening. They're recording videos of mothers being torn from their children, being arrested outside of courthouses, of pregnant women being roughed up on the streets and being detained, of fathers being separated from their weeping daughters. And these images are crucial because each act of documentation is chipping away at the alternate reality that Trump and Stephen Miller have created, this alternate reality in which they're cracking down on gangsters and rapists and serious criminals. I cannot emphasize the importance of this enough. The administration is ramping up deportations to a never-before-seen level, which means that they are more visible than ever. They used to happen in the shadows. Now people can see it happening everywhere, and people are taking out their phones, they're recording what's happening to their family members, to their friends, to their neighbors down the street. And as a result, these deportations, these arrests, are becoming much harder to misrepresent. And this is a threat to the narrative that Trump and Stephen Miller have spent years putting out there. And so I really believe that if Los Angeles refuses to be baited into violence and instead stays disciplined and continues to dedicate themselves to relentless exposure of how ICE is kidnapping innocent people and what they're actually doing to valued members of our community, I think this can all end up backfiring on the Trump administration, and that Trump's attempt to provoke chaos in our communities will end up collapsing under its own cruelty.
And Jean Guerrero, I wanted to ask you about the conflict, obviously, that has arisen between the elected officials in California and the Trump administration. You know, I was there as a reporter back in 1992 at the Los Angeles riot back then. And there really is no comparison between the events of the past weekend and 1992. Back then, 60 people, more than 60 people were killed. 12,000 were arrested. Over 1,000 buildings were damaged. And by the time that President George H.W. Bush brought in the National Guard, 30 people had already been killed. And he did so at the request of a Republican governor, Pete Wilson, and the Democratic mayor, Tom Bradley. Talk about the difference between how the elected officials are responding here and the excuse that Trump has used to call in the National Guard and the Marines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a majority of these protests are peaceful. As I mentioned, you know, you see children at these rallies. These are demonstrations of people who are simply trying to peacefully demonstrate and tell the federal government that they do not want these kidnappings of the people that they love in Los Angeles. The last time that you had a president send the National Guard against the governor's wishes, I believe was in 1963 to enforce desegregation in Alabama. So it is really unprecedented. And honestly, it's textbook authoritarianism. I mean, you now see, you know, Trump talking about arresting Newsom and other California leaders. And on the one hand, this is shocking, but on the other, it's completely predictable. I mean, this is what authoritarian governments do. They use immigrants as a pretext to go after the opposition, and immigrants are just the first target. If you look at the white nationalist literature that inspired people like Stephen Miller, it vilifies not only a law-abiding immigrants, but anyone who defends them. The worst villains are not immigrants in this literature, even though they are described as monsters and as beasts and as threats to Western civilization. The worst villains in this literature, and I'm talking about books like The Camp of the Saints, which Stephen Miller has openly promoted, the worst villains are the white allies of immigrants, the politicians and the activists and the ordinary people who show them empathy. Those are the people who are, quote, tainted by the milk of human kindness, as one of Miller's formative books puts it. And so the logical conclusion of Trump's policies is not just ethnic cleansing, it is ideological cleansing. It's a purge not just of people, but of principles. They want to root out anyone who believes in compassion for the stranger, who believes in immigrant rights, who believes in a multicultural or multiracial democracy. This is a vision of America where you are American only if you choose hate. And if you choose love or compassion, you are part of what is poisoning the blood of this country. And so I'm not surprised to see the president coming after innocent people who are not just the immigrants in our communities, but the people who are defending them, who are white, who are black, who are brown, who are of all different colors, and who are simply expressing their humanity and their compassion for the other.
Jean Guerrero, you contributed to a New York Times piece Monday headlined Seven Hidden Ways Trump's Mega Bill Would Remake America, in which you wrote, quote, this bill would pave the way for the largest investment in federal immigration enforcement since the establishment of the Department of Homeland Security in 2002, one that would turn that department into a Trojan horse for an assault on the civil rights of all Americans. Can you lay out your concerns? We just have a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. So nearly two-thirds of Americans live in what is known as the 100-mile border enforcement zone, where people under this bill, they already face the risk of warrantless seizures, of racial profiling, of constant surveillance. And this bill just makes it easier and more certain that all Americans in this country, and particularly if you live within that zone, are going to not be able to walk on the street without fear of being detained. You already have detentions and deportations of U.S. citizens, of law-abiding immigrants without due process. And I think what this bill is doing is it's providing the government with the resources to be able to continue to do that at levels that we have never before seen in this country.
Jean Guerrero, I want to thank you very much for being with us, New York Times contributing opinion writer and author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump and the White Nationalist Agenda, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Coming up, California's Attorney General Rob Bonta. He sued President Trump for deploying the National Guard in L.A. Stay with us.
Señor presidente, le vengo a avisar, no tengo papeles para trabajar. Presidente, pregunto por qué matan al moreno con piel de café. Ajá. Yeah. Ajá. Si fuera presidente, honestamente, si fuera presidente.
President by the East LA-based Las Cafeteras, performing here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to cover the Trump administration sending troops into the streets of Los Angeles, we're joined by California Attorney General Rob Bonta. On Monday, he sued the Trump administration for deploying the National Guard without the consent of California Governor Gavin Newsom. The lawsuit came a day after Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, threatened to arrest Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass for obstructing immigration enforcement. On Sunday night, Governor Newsom responded to Homan's threat during an interview on MSNBC.
Arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn. but I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
On Monday, President Trump told a reporter he would support Homan arresting Newsom. He said, quote, I would do it if I were Tom. Listen carefully.
He's daring Tom Homan to come and arrest him. Should he do it?
I would do it if I were Tom. I think it's great.
I think it's great, said the president. We're joined now by Rob Bonta, the Attorney General of California. Welcome to Democracy Now! If you can start off by explaining your latest lawsuit, what is it, 23 or 24 against President Trump around the National Guard? And then are you planning to sue around his deployment of 700 Marines?
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you. We've brought 25 lawsuits in 20 weeks, more than one a week, because that is how blatantly and brazenly, consistently and frequently the president has violated the law. He is a repeat offender when it comes to breaking the law. And yesterday we filed our lawsuit against the Trump administration for their unlawful deployment of the National Guard into Los Angeles. They rely on a law. It's called 10 U.S.C. 12406. Which requires a rebellion, which there is not, a invasion, which there is not, or the inability for the federal government to execute the laws with the, quote, regular forces, which doesn't exist either. So none of the required elements of the law are there to trigger the use of the authority to deploy the National Guard. And the law also requires that the president issue the order to bring in the National Guard through the president, or through the governor, excuse me, meaning the governor has to consent to it, and Governor Newsom has strenuously objected to the National Guard coming in. So we believe on the plain and unambiguous language of the law, there's no authority to call in the California National Guard. The California National Guard is a joint operation. The commander-in-chief is the governor of California in most times. But the president, if there is a clear statutory authority, can call them in. There is no clear statutory authority here. So we're asking the court to declare invalid the president's order to call in the National Guard and to order them unlawfully present.
And Attorney General...
And the Marines.
Attorney General...
We're also looking closely at the Marines.
At a news conference on Monday, when ahead of filing the lawsuit, you accused Trump of, quote, trying to manufacture chaos and crisis on the ground for his own political ends. What do you think Trump's aim is here?
He wants conflict. He wants chaos. He wants confusion. We, on the other hand, in California, we want peace. We want calm. We have the largest sheriff's department in the nation, in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, the third largest police department in the nation, in the LA Police Department. They are very well resourced, highly trained men and women, fully capable of addressing any issues that are attendant to the mostly peaceful protests. They have fully within their resources the ability to address all challenges when it comes to public safety. The president, by bringing in first authorizing 2,000 National Guard members, and then another 2,000, and then 700 Marines, he is unnecessarily and counterproductively escalating. He's inflaming tensions. He's provoking a situation. Unfortunately, I think he wants conflict. He wants something to erupt. So that provides the basis for him to try to grasp and seize additional power. His through line and his modus operandi is to just seek more power. That's why he calls everything that's not an emergency, an emergency. He calls things that aren't an invasion. He uses that language very specifically because those are the triggers to give him more authority. But he can't change the facts on the ground just by lying about that factual scenario. And unfortunately, we think chaos and confusion is the end goal. And that's why we're urging everyone to be peaceful, lawful, safe in their protests and exercises of their First Amendment rights.
And you also said that the January 6, 2020 events in Washington were far closer to meeting the definition of a quote, rebellion under the section of law that Trump is evoking. Yet, obviously, he defended many of the protesters back of January 6th. Your response to the double standard here?
Absolutely consistent with President Trump's ongoing hypocrisy. He says, for example, he's going to go after undocumented violent criminals, and he goes after two-year-old children and people lawfully present and refugees seeking safety when they have persecution and violence at home. And to call what's happening in Los Angeles a invasion or a rebellion just defies credulity, and especially when there was something closer to a rebellion, a armed attempt to overthrow the leadership of the United States and place in power a president who wasn't duly elected and displace someone who was duly elected. But he stood by was not involved in that situation, though he tries to insert himself into what's happening in California when it's fully under control with the local law enforcement. So his through line is to seize as much power as possible, lie about the facts on the ground to justify those seizure attempts, and is often, as you've just recognized, hypocritical.
Attorney General, will you investigate whether the FBI has provocateurs provoking violence in L.A.?
You know, we're interested in evidence, in facts. If there is information shared with us that leads us to believe there is unlawful conduct, we'll go where the facts go and where the law takes us. Right now, my understanding about what's happening on the ground in Los Angeles is there are mostly peaceful protesters exercising their time-honored and constitutionally supported rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, and freedom of speech. Unfortunately, and I've seen this time and time again, when you have peaceful protests, there are often those who use those protests as a cloak for their participation in unlawful activities and chaotic activities. They have nothing to do with the underlying subject matter that's being protested, but they use the opportunity to create some chaos and some division. Those folks need to be held accountable, arrested, prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That is not what we need right now, and that is not consistent with First Amendment rights and uplifting our democracy.
Also, have you heard or been in communication with attorneys generals in other parts of the country? Are they actively preparing for an event like this to happen in their state as well?
I'm proud to say that the Democratic attorneys general talk consistently, regularly. We prepared for months before the presidential election. We've been talking every week and often every day in preparation for the unlawful actions and undemocratic actions and unconstitutional actions that define this presidency. We spoke yesterday at length. They were very supportive. Many reached out to me over the weekend as the events unfolded in Los Angeles. And for that, I'm grateful for the camaraderie, for the collaboration, for the teamwork. And yes, the Democratic attorneys general are very well aware of what the executive order says. It is not specific to Los Angeles, nor is it specific to California. It applies potentially nationwide, including in any one of their states. That's why the Democratic governors spoke out against this unprecedented and unnecessary and counterproductive step taken by the Trump administration to deploy National Guard. And it's also why Democratic attorneys general are on high alert for what happens next. Los Angeles and California may be the first place, but unfortunately may not be the last place where this unlawful action by the president takes place.
Rob Bonta, can you explain what Los Angeles being a sanctuary city and California being a sanctuary state means? But first, one protest leader suggested the other day that Governor Newsom can order the National Guard to stand down. Is that true?
Let me answer the second question first. The governor is the commander-in-chief of the California National Guard, and unless or until there's a specifically triggered statute that authorizes the president to call in the National Guard, and that is rare and infrequent and has not occurred here, then the governor is the commander-in-chief, but the president can be involved when there's clear statutory authority. right now, the president has called in the National Guard. The National Guard, guards people themselves, are they should have clear directions, clear orders, and a clear mission. That's why we're going to court to make it clear, that the president's orders are invalid and unlawful, and then they would come back under the leadership and command of Governor Newsom. But it needs to be clear, in our view, through the court, not some wrestling match between the governor and the president where the National Guard's people are left confused. We go through the normal process, the appropriate process, which is the courts, to declare invalid the president's actions. Los Angeles and California, to your first question, are pro-public safety jurisdictions. We want to use our public safety resources, our law enforcement resources, on tackling criminal laws, enforcing criminal laws, on investigating, arresting, and prosecuting criminals, people who rob, people who murder, people who rape. And we will leave the immigration, the civil immigration enforcement, it's not criminal, the civil immigration enforcement, to the agencies and departments in the federal government who work on that. We think by deploying our resources to enhance public safety, we have a safer community. By not being directly involved, in most cases, with some exceptions in the statute, in civil immigration enforcement, more victims will come forward to report crime. More witnesses will come forward to cooperate with law enforcement. It makes our communities safer. That is our choice. It and is fully consistent with our constitutional rights under the 10th Amendment to use our not unlimited and often scarce law enforcement resources to enhance public safety and to leave civil immigration enforcement to the federal government. The federal government can do their job. If they do it lawfully, we will not obstruct, we will not interfere. But they cannot conscript, commandeer, draft into service, force local law enforcement to do their job for them. They must do their job while we decide, while we have decided to focus on enhancing public safety through enforcement of criminal laws, not civil immigration enforcement.
Rob Bonta, we want to thank you for being with us, Attorney General of California, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Next up, an update on Kilmer Abrego Garcia. He's back in the United States, but the federal authorities have jailed him in Tennessee. Then on to the Gaza flotilla. Stay with us.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. One day.
Performing We Shall Overcome, accompanied by Alexander Rowatin on cello, here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now for an update on Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father who was wrongfully sent to a maximum security mega prison in El Salvador in March, now facing federal charges in Tennessee after being returned to the U.S. last week. A two-count indictment unsealed Friday in Nashville alleges Abrego Garcia was illegally transporting undocumented immigrants within the United States. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced the charges, an unusual move. She also described allegations against Abrego Garcia that were not in the indictment and seemed flustered when questioned about this by Wall Street Journal reporter Sadie Gurman.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but you were mentioning, you know, that he was, had some involvement in these in a murder, you know, or was connected to groups that had, you know, involved with this other smuggling ring. But to be clear, the only charges he's facing right now are the, like, you know, human smuggling charges. Just the, this, the that's the one offense. But the other things that you have talked about are not actually in the indictment.
No, co-conspirators allege that. And we were clear to say that he is charged with It's not only very serious charges of alien smuggling. And again, there were children involved in that. You know, human trafficking, not only in our country, but in our world, is very, very real.
A hearing set for Friday will determine whether Kilmara Perdigo Garcia will remain in custody. For more, we're joined by Chris Newman, a lawyer for Kilmara's family and legal director of the National Day Laborer Organizing Network based in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for being with us. Start off by talking about his case. As I listened to one of his lawyers speaking the other day, he said he learned that Kilmara was in the United States from the media, the way the rest of people learned.
That's correct. We all did. We are obviously relieved that he is now back in the United States, a little bit closer in proximity to his wife and family. That's certainly much better than being in functionally a black site in El Salvador. But he's still a far away from what we want, which is for him to be freed and returned to his family.
And has his wife or his mother been able to see him now that he's back in the United States?
They've been able to speak to him for the first time. And remember, we didn't even know if he was alive after April 17th. The last time that we had heard from him was through Senator Van Hollen when he and I went to El Salvador, and we were able to, briefly get proof of life and make sure that his health was okay. He wasn't aware of all the allegations that were being hurled at him by the President of the United States, by all of the legal accusations against him. And then after that, we had no contact. No one had contact with him. But thankfully, Jennifer is now able to at least talk to him by phone, and hopefully we'll be able to see him soon.
And can you talk about the significance of these federal charges in Tennessee that have been unsealed?
Well, they have to be treated with the highest amount of suspicion, given the unprecedented amount of defamation and disinformation that has been directed at Kilmara and his family. You know, I went to law school 20 years ago. I studied history. Never have I ever heard of or am aware of a case where the President of the United States has been as invested in the criminal prosecution of an individual person. I think it's astonishing. I think we're going to have to fight very, very hard to make sure that he gets a fair trial, given the extent to which the court of public opinion has been, for example, tainted by all of the really, truly awful things that have been said by the president and his cronies.
Chris Newman, you're also the legal director of Endelon, the National Day Labor Organizing Network in Los Angeles. And I'm wondering if you could make a connection between, I mean, we're seeing the protests, but we see much less of immigrants being arrested and hauled away, or how many across this country are now being jailed from Los Angeles to Dallas, from Phoenix to Chicago. If you can make a connection between what happened to Kilmara and what's happening on the streets right now of L.A., and particularly talk about the focus, as Kilmara was, on day laborers, even unions coming out to support Kilmara and going down, union leaders, to see him, try to be able to visit him in the Salvadoran prison before he was moved back here.
Gosh, I'm so happy that you asked me that question, Amy, because the story for Kilmara began when he was seeking work at a Home Depot near his home. He was falsely accused of being a gang member by a corrupt local police who subsequently was fired and himself pled guilty for misuse of confidential informant information. I'm so grateful to Greg Sargent from the New Republic for unearthing that story. It hasn't been discussed enough. When he was taken into custody after those false charges of him being a gang member or violent or et cetera, they said, oopsie. We made a mistake, but they handed him over to ICE. Now, at this point, it's important to understand, Had there been a sanctuary policy in place of the kind that we have in California, Kilmer never would have been transferred to ICE in the first place. He then functionally won his immigration case, won withholding of removal, got work authorization, joined a union, was bettering his life when he was then picked up in this alien enemies, sweep and stunt. The attorney, by the way, who admitted mistake in federal court, Erez, is somebody I know because he was opposing counsel challenging our sanctuary policies in Los Angeles. This guy is a believer. He was a Trump guy, and he admitted mistake. And then, of course, President Bukele then says oopsie when he is outside of U.S. airspace. And I think the nexus to your point, Amy, is the following. You know, I've been down to El Salvador three times in the last month trying to liberate Kilmer. But what people in El Salvador say is that, number one, there are tens of thousands of people in El Salvador in similar situations as Kilmer. No one knows where they are, if they're alive, what they're being charged for, why they're being put in CICOT or other prisons. But number two, what they said to every single congressman is, you in the United States need to act fast because El Salvador is in essence the ghost of Christmas future for what's to come in the United States. In El Salvador, Bukele has become authoritarian. He's become a fascist. He's removed all the guardrails. And everyone in El Salvador said, you all need to work now to preserve the rule of law and the guardrails, because we can see that Trump is, in essence, importing the political technology of President Bukele in El Salvador. And what we see in Los Angeles is people trying to protect the innocent the best way that they know how, by going out into the streets. And yes, it's messy. I'm so grateful that you asked that question of Attorney General Bonta. I really do hope that he investigates the role of Kash Patel and other, you know, I mean, it's hard to even say it, but like Dan Bongino, who's, I don't know, the number two in command in the FBI. I think it's very important that we investigate the role of whether or not there are federal agents as provocateurs, because on Fox News, Sean Hannity says that it's the protesters, immigrants, anarchists throwing bottles. It is equally as likely that there are federal agents that are themselves trying to stoke violence. I've seen it before. You know, I was counsel on the case challenging SB 1070 and challenging Joe Arpaio. That was a common practice, that they would put undercover plainclothes people to disguise themselves among protesters in order to provoke violence, to then deter protest. Because again, the other message is, if these protests are perceived to be unsafe, then people are deterred from going out and expressing their First Amendment rights. But, you know, I'm confident in Los Angeles, we're not going to fall for that. The immigrant rights, the civil rights community, we are going to show the best of Los Angeles, the beauty of Los Angeles, and hopefully Attorney General Bonta does his part as well by investigating the role of the Trump administration in provoking violence.
Chris Newman, I want to thank you for being with us, legal director of Endelon, the National Day Labor Organizing Network based in Los Angeles, and lawyer for Kilmer Abrego-Garcia's family. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We end today's show with an update on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. Israel's formally placed 8 of the 12 international activists on the flotilla under arrest after they refused to sign a voluntary deportation order, including Rima Hassan, French-Palestinian member of the European Parliament. Israel's already deported 4 other Freedom Flotilla passengers, including Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who's just arrived in Paris. The flotilla was challenging the Israeli siege on Gaza. The march to Gaza to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt is about to start this week, demanding a total end to the Gaza siege. For more, we go to Dubai, where we're joined by Hala Rerit, who's preparing to join that global march to Gaza. She's an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. Hello, welcome back to Democracy Now! In this last minutes that we have, and you, if you can talk about that leap from being a top-level State Department official to now marching from Cairo to the Rafah border and what you're hoping to achieve.
Amy, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be back with you. Well, fundamentally, justice anywhere is a threat to all of us, whether it's in Los Angeles or El Salvador, where we've just heard your segments and bless your show for covering these issues, or in Gaza. Silence does not protect us. Silence does not ensure that we will be okay. It's quite the opposite. Silence ensures the injustice spreads. I dedicated my entire adult life to diplomacy because I'm fundamentally a peacemaker. But unfortunately, I saw after 20 years, almost 20 years of service, that there is some institutionalized corruption within our government that profits from war at all costs, that profits from genocide. And at this point, when we're seeing starvation, absolute starvation of civilians in Gaza while they are simultaneously being bombarded, words are no longer enough. I've been on your show. I've done interviews with you. I've done interviews on dozens, if not hundreds, of networks across the world. At this point, we need action. That's why I'm joining over 3,000 other human beings that want to help their fellow human beings from over 50 countries. We're going to arrive to Cairo on Thursday, and then go to Al Arish the next day, and then walk from Al Arish to Rafah in a show of human solidarity, because we cannot live in a world where we as human beings accept other human beings being forcibly starved.
Khaled Rarit, we have to leave it there, but we'd like to ask you to stay so we can do a post-show and post it online at democracynow.org. Khaled Rarit is participating in the Gaza walk from Cairo to Rafah. She's an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. She was the Arabic language spokesperson for the State Department. That does it for our show. We have three job openings. Check them out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments